Welcome to the Love, Serve, Disciple podcast, a show highlighting the work of the Salvation Army around the territory as we focus on loving, serving, and discipling those in our communities. Find additional information about this month's guests and resources at allforjesus.salvationarmysouth.org.
Hey, welcome back to the Love, Serve, Disciple podcast, where we've been talking about our territorial priorities, specifically focusing on discipleship. I'm your host for today, Major Jamie Satterley, and I'm super excited to continue on this conversation. You know, under the banner of discipleship, we've been focusing lately on prayer, but we're going to move now into leadership development, and we have a guest with us today, Sergeant Ruth Euforgi, who is going to talk to us a little bit. We're going to have a conversation on leadership development and how that plays into discipleship. Welcome, Ruthie. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. We're so excited to hear about your ministry, but also just to hear your thoughts on what leadership development looks like through your experience. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us who Ruth Euforgi is.
Sure. So I am Sergeant Ruth Euforgi, as you said, and I am in Cleveland, Tennessee. I actually grew up in Cleveland, Tennessee. It is my hometown. I left here back in early 90s and migrated just 30 miles north to Chattanooga and had my first career there as an addictions counselor and was on a long prodigal journey and said I would never live in Cleveland, Tennessee again, and I would never be involved with organized ministry, and here I am. So I kind of came back to the Lord, as I said, in 2004 and really felt just compelled to reach out to people like me who were prodigals, who felt like they had gone so far from the grasp of grace that God would have nothing to do with us. And I thought, yes, he will. Yes, he will. I got to tell you this. And so I began to pray about an avenue into full-time ministry. I grew up in the Church of God, so I didn't have proper credentialing for the Church of God. And I was doing a private practice at the home church that I went to here in Cleveland, doing private practice with addiction counseling there at the church. And in 2008, we had a recession, and because I was a cash-only practice, I began to look for options to supplement my income during Christmas time. I had a 13-year-old son at the time and saw an ad online for Salvation Army for the cattle coordinator and for Angel Tree. And I applied for Angel Tree, but because I had fundraising experience, they called me about the kettles, which I was like, they're going to call me about those stupid kettles. I know they will, because you know, because I had fundraising experience. They're going to call me about them. And they did. And I took the position. I fell in love with my bell ringers that year. And really the mission of the Army. I did not know even the scope or the broad reach of the Army. I knew kettles and Angel Tree. That's really all I knew. And partway through that season, Major Jim Lawrence approached me and said, hey, I've been praying for the Lord to send me somebody to develop a core in Cleveland, and I think you may be the girl. I said, you know what? Let me have the weekend to pray about it and talk to my son. And we pulled over, and I said, son, you know, our family, a single mom, I said, we have an opportunity to work in full-time ministry. And I said, could you pray for us about that? It still makes me cry. And yeah. He prayed the most amazing prayer and felt immediate peace. And I called Major Lawrence that next Monday morning and said, yeah, I'll do it. I don't know what it means. Don't know what it looks like. I don't know Army lingo. I didn't even know what TSA was forever. And what is TSA?
So what does this have to do with airports?
Yeah, right. Are we going somewhere? So he, you know, kettle season ended and he said, okay, well, you're the core planner. I was like, okay, well, what does that mean? And he's like, I'll check back in with you in about 6 weeks. So we started a little Bible study in our family store, prayed the furniture didn't sell on Monday so we'd have a place to sit, and called my bell ringers, and my bell ringers came in for that Bible study, and that's how we began.
And now out of that has grown some pretty incredible ministry opportunities. Can you just share a little bit so that our listeners know, like, what does ministry look like in Cleveland, Tennessee?
Yeah, so we have a core. It is not a traditional core in that we're in a building in old downtown Cleveland, which is about to be revitalized, but we don't have a community center or anything like that. We don't have a chapel. We have a multifunctional room that today at noontime will be a cafeteria, and it will feed our homeless friends or people who just need a place to come and get a meal, a hot meal. We do that every day, Monday through Saturday at noon. And then we do a takeout meal on Sunday morning and then a hot meal on Sunday night for dinner. That meal or that back room has been a disaster area staging center during the 2011 and 2013 or 2012 tornadoes in this area. 2011, we had 6 tornadoes touch down here. We had 9 of our neighbors killed in that tornado and about 450 homes destroyed. And then in 2020, during COVID, we had another tornado touch down in East Cleveland, which is one of the poorer areas of Cleveland. And we worked to help some of our neighbors over there who were uninsured. So we had to do a lot of the paperwork for them, but we were able, I think, to get 6 or 7 homes either rebuilt or restored completely. So that was a pretty amazing time for us.
So let's talk for a minute about a concept that kind of plagues a lot of churches in the United States, and certainly the Salvation Army is not immune to it. And that's kind of this sense of a pervasiveness of consumerism in the church, right? Yeah. People, it's just a mm-hmm. place for me to come in and I sit and I receive. The church gives me something, whatever I need, and then I'm out again. In your experience and what you're doing there in Cleveland, how do we kind of turn that around and encourage our congregations not to be content to be consumers, but to actively be in service in the kingdom and the mission?
Yeah, I think the for us in Cleveland, one of the things that have attracted a lot of our core members and soldiers has been our mission, because we have been very visible through the disaster work. And we're a smaller town. We have about 118,000 in our city county. And that is one of the things that attracts, you know, they come in one way or the other through Angel Tree. Some of our younger adults have came into the coffee shop just for a concert. And then they kind of go, okay, well, what's going on the other side of the building? There's lots of things happening over there. And they come in. But also just to challenge and remind, you know, that we are called. Ephesians, I think it's 2:10, says we're designed, created for a purpose, for a good work to do, and to remind our people a lot. Hey, you know, yes, we are coming together to worship together, but it you know, the church is not the building. It's not the brick and mortar. It's us. And so, you know, when you leave here on Sunday mornings or after a youth service, you to take this gospel back into your individual world. And what does that look like for you? And to really remind, you know, that the church leaves the building every time we walk out the door.
It's important for our people to feel a sense of ownership in the ministry, right? And that when it's mine, I want to cultivate it and I want to, you know, grow it and I want to see it expand. And so it's not just about, you know, this is the church and I come here to receive, but this is my church and I'm a part of this mission. And so I have a role and responsibility. Like you said, every one of us is called to share and to build the kingdom in some way. So what does that look like with the gifts God has given you? How can I participate? I think we just have to help people to understand, you know, that it's not about being credentialed or, you know, having to have a certain amount of experience. So it's just about empowering people, I think, to see beyond what they might perceive as their limitations.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in our social media society, connection has taken on a whole new meaning, and we can connect every day. We do. We have more connection at our fingertips, but feel more lonely than we ever have. You know, if you look at the mental health statistics, the increase in depression and and feelings of loneliness and isolation are big, more than they ever have been in history. So why is that if we have more ways to connect? And it is that relational connection, that face-to-face, that familial connection that people are so hungry for, and a place to belong. And, you know, one of the things that we do every Sunday morning, go, hey, if you're here for the first time, you get to be a visitor. But any time after that, your family and the whole congregation says that, you know, and because I'll go, if you're here the first time, you're a visitor. But if you're here the second time, you are. And then everybody says family. And so really being intentional about, hey, you belong here. And if you belong here and you have a place at our table, so to speak, you know, everybody looks the same sitting at the table. And so really just incorporating that mindset early on with people who just walk in the door to visit has been real helpful. And people have said, you know, I felt so welcome there. I felt like family. Those of us who've been here for a while, to recognize that people are very hungry for that familial connection. A lot of people don't have it.
Ruthie, can you talk a little bit about what leadership development means to you personally? What does it mean in your own personal life? What does it mean in your ministry?
Yeah, you know, relational ministry is really the method that we use most in Cleveland. Again, through that, as we were just talking about, giving people a place to feel like they belong. And then when they get in, you know, and settle in, begin to look for, through conversation, through observation, at what some of their gifts and talents may be and what where they would feel comfortable. We've done the spiritual gifts inventory, you know, at different meetings before, just to kind of see where people fall. With our kids, we do the 12 or 21 laws of leadership, and really just kind of give people a place to go, hey, I'm not an out front kind of person, but I'm really good at sending cards to people. And, you know, I'd like to send cards. So I had a lady for years that would just send cards for people who were not at church, or we knew that we're in the hospital, or, you know, just making that extra effort to remind people they belong here and they have something to offer. No matter how big or small that may seem to them, it takes all of us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's why it's so important that we empower young people like you're talking about. I love that you said you do the 21 laws of leadership with kids. It's important that we take the time to mentor them and not wait until like some, we've said this before on this podcast, not wait until like there's a magical age for leadership or for service, but kids have a role to play now. And so equipping them and mentoring them and pouring into them those leadership skills now really only strengthens them and the church for the future.
Yeah. So in our coffeehouse ministry in particular, Joel developed a 3-tier program for leadership. And our kids at 14, I think they can come in at 14. They have to come in for an interview process if they want to be a student leader. And so they will come before a panel. We do it on purpose to get them prepared for interviews and to be intimidated, you know. And so they'll come in and go, hey, why do you want to be a student leader in our program? So once they are get through the interview, then they are, you know, they spend about 125 hours just learning about the 21 laws of leadership, about coffee, about they may sweep and clean a bathroom, but they really become at the ground floor. And then the second level, the next 125 hours is they get an apron and get to go behind the counter, and they learn to operate a point of sale system. They learn to do good customer service and what that looks like. And then their third tier is to find a need in the community, identify a need in the community and a resource to fill it. And so that once they finish those 350 hours, they have a marketable skill and they have some great experience. We'll job shadow them. We have one young man that was interested in journalism. And so we hooked him up with our PR person, and he shadowed her for a week. Like, you know, well, how do you write bulletins, and how do you write a social media post, and how do you do those things? And so he got to shadow her. So, you know, really just, again, intentionality through that relational ministry and, you know, discipleship and leadership, it's not always convenient. And so being willing to be inconvenienced, like our kids and even our adults when they struggle with different aspects of leadership, and through a discipleship, you know, discipling them and being good leaders. That doesn't happen between the 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And so being willing to be inconvenienced is crucial, because it's a commitment to that individual to walk with them while they find their own legs and feel empowered. One of our first student interns, we didn't realize that Cleveland is not a food famine area, except it was on the weekends. There was no food resources on the weekends. And one of our early student interns was on the track team, and she would run downtown every Tuesday mornings, and she would see a lady sleeping on a bench. And so she befriended this lady, and through her friendship and her breakfasts with this lady, they went to have breakfast every Tuesday after they become friends. She said, you know, we can get food Monday through Friday, but there's not a food option on the weekends. And so because of that, this young lady went to her family, and they began to get together with some other churches, civic organizations, came into our kitchen and began to make lunch. And from that, we still have lunch every Saturday for our homeless friends, and then Sunday breakfast and dinner. But that was a direct result of our student leadership program.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. That third tier, right, is really like where the magic happens, right? You're building into these young people, and then they're able to then go out into the community and replicate what's been done for them. Do you know how many people off the top of your head have been through this leadership program?
It's 200 plus students, and I'm probably hitting that low. I'm probably lowball on that. Joel knows that statistic right off the top of his head. But yeah, it's been quite a few students.
So then you think about the kingdom impact that has. You know, it's not just the life of the young person, but then it's all the people that come after them. Like, you know, this lady that she met just during her morning runs. How many lives are being changed because of the investment in this student? And that's really what it's all about, right? We're investing in these young people to build them up, but also to think about how that impacts the kingdom on the whole in ways that probably we never imagined when these programs
Absolutely.
Were started.
Yeah, one of our very first baristas is serving in Cambodia now. And he's been over there. He's married now, has a child. He grew up in Georgia as a farmer and went to school with the idea of missionaries, but because of his time in the coffee house as a barista, he has started a similar coffee house ministry in Cambodia as he teaches people how to grow their own food and have community. And now they have a coffee house ministry for that relational component as well. So literally, we can see where the impact of the ministry has literally gone around the world.
Ruthie, we are so appreciative of your time today to talk to us just about the unique things that are happening there in Cleveland. And just to give our listeners a little bit of an understanding of, you know, maybe a new way that this can look. Something as simple as a coffee house and investing in a student, and look at how that's kind of, like you said, spread across the world. It's just that we just got to change our perspective a little bit, I think, and ask God to help us to see with new eyes how we can invest in people, how we can develop the people who are under our care, and how we can help them see that they are part of this mission.
Even our adults, you know, early on, if they come to me and go, hey, I've been thinking about doing a game night for, okay, well, what does that look like? Put that on paper for me. Let's just kind of and encourage them to step out. If they feel that God's asked them to do something, then I'm not going to stand in the way of it. Allow people to think outside of the box, because, you know, we put God in a box, it didn't end well.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources about the Salvation Army's territorial priorities, visit allforjesus.salvationarmysouth.org and follow us on Facebook at Sal Army South.